Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
In this podcast, I'm going to cover the explanation of electron spin, but sort of from a rather unusual angle. And what I'm going to do is address the filter, sort of the social filter that we bring to it. And when I talk about social filter, this is our conceptualization of power relationships, which sort of set our own understanding bandwidth, sort of the range of frequencies of different understandings we can accommodate, how long we can hold it, and how long we can process it. So essentially, if you can access several explanations at once and hold them for a longer period of time, you'll get further along the way to understanding this thing of electron spin. So what is an electron spin? Electrons have a charge, they have a mass. It's rather strange, they've got a magnetic field, so therefore they have a direction, a north and south pole. And they also have an angular momentum going around the place. And this relates to, or was discovered from, an entry into sort of fairly high powered or non-obvious mathematics about 80 years ago, or possibly getting on 100 years, about 90 years ago, that went into this mathematics and came out with this understanding. We've been playing catch-up, and people have been wrestling with the fact is, you understand something mathematically, there's this assumption that I should be able to understand in one hit through a model, and that's not it. And this process of not being able to understand it was really exposed, looking backwards, reflected that people who don't understand it have, or don't want to understand, or aren't interested in it, tend to overall statistically be positioned in this very much buying into the power play of humanity, which sort of sets their problem solving to short term and through one simplistic model. And that is that in a sort of power play, people need to use you, you need to use other people, you need a fairly simple algorithm to control others and to be controlled. A simple algorithm means that you have to be explained what to do, react very quickly in a short time frame. You're a moving part in society. And so what I'm putting forward here is that to really understand spin, you have to move yourself away from the moving part of society aspect of whether it's a simple, you want a single explanation, you want a short-term understanding to achieve it, which is generally what you need to do in terms of commerce. People pay you some money to build a house or dig a garden. They want you dug within a time frame, within a so much. It's there's the actual functional currency of society is a sort of a currency which is short term and fairly concrete. Now, where I came up against this is building a actual demonstration of spin, so it's a concrete thing. So I had to go through a series of short term concrete things, but build it into a longer-term project. This is the Einstein to Haas pendulum. So just very quickly, by actually controlling the spin in an object, the spin has the magnetic field, so the use of the magnetic field to control the spin, which therefore controls the angular momentum, I can actually start to rock a pendulum, just like a child swing rocking mysteriously back and forth in a park as a flood the magnetic field through it to get it there. And then having built it, sort of shut down, it's too complicated to explain, let's just quieten everything down to the lowest common denominator and actually build something and solve these problems. You come back to the stage of you're building forward, and you start to see these things where you see what's put out there, you know, what's occupying the space ahead of what you're trying to explain. And thinking about it, if you work past all the incorrect information and sort of ask yourself, why are people pumping out so much sort of fundamentally flawed, incorrect ideas. So, like, some of the incorrect ideas is the feeling that a magnetic pole will be automatically attracted to the opposite magnetic pole, whereas a magnetic dipole will try and move into the strongest gradient or strongest field concentration. That sort of thing. You know, why is it so hard, and why is there so much junk? And sort of looking at it and putting that aside, looking at this, I took a YouTube explanation, children's explanation of electricity, and took it apart. But what's really strongly overlaid in it is a power relationship between the two characters and an inferred power relationship with the children. And they definitely weren't teaching science, but they were teaching power relationships. That is, what you thought and how people treated you. And if you thought correctly as the person who has the pool of thought, which is actually incorrect, but if you adopt that, you will increase your own personal power. But if you don't, the actual path of knowledge was actually not in comprehension, it was in your power feeling. And just sticking on that, the general response is people's response to it. Once you have that framework, they give you a response of, well, it's good enough, it's out there, people like it. The actual terminology doesn't deal with the actual understanding, but deals with people's power relationship with it. So that's a major point. And things in terms of their preference for thinking style fits in with their concept of power relationships. And after that, I did a short introduction through the various people involved, and just align with a photograph of the actual scientist and an explanation of it. And it was very interesting that I fell into, or reconstruct afterwards, something which could be translated, and that was a power relationship explanation that he's a person and he's respected and he that, rather than the actual fact is secondary. And you can sort of see that people, sort of casual people, like people coming to a theme park, a Western theme park, want to see the hourly showdown, the saloon fights, and the various things happening. People have this idea of science in that they want something happening and they want a power relationship. They're seeing science very much as a theme park, but not an actual occupation. So there's a difference in them, and the theme park explanation of science is very much to do with power relationships. There's one group. We're looking at society in there. So in the saloon, if you walk around at, say, an empty museum, there's not much there, but it's much more alive. There's characters and names and people, and you can imagine your way into it. So this is a way of thinking, and it's a way of thinking I'm very much sort of analysing. Oh, this is what this person is asking. The person is asking you to think in this particular way and respond in this particular way and support a power framework. So it's not so much that if you choose not to engage in a power relationship, you're an immediate threat, and there's this process you hear me hitting a mozzie flying around the place. There's very much an idea that the person, the interaction, has to have power credentials. It has to be decorated with power credentials to have entry into the social mind space. So if it hasn't got the power credentials with it, people are going to shut it out. So that's my general analysis of it. So that being said, that thesis coming across, it means that people have a propensity not to deal with multiple explanations and not to deal long-term, to allow an understanding to develop, because everything's transactional, whereas understanding is open-ended. It's not necessarily a transaction. It's a process, a never-ending process, whereas a transaction has an offer, action, and compensation, or it's got a series of things. And it has to be closed off so that the transactions can be built upon, whereas understanding is not necessarily a built-upon thing. So getting back to this, the overall thesis of select a particular model to describe spin and then decorate it with power, and you will understand in a short time, is the sort of power paradigm thing. And you can say definitely by looking at it over a period of time that people have not made a mark of it, and they have a behavior process to actively avoid deeper understanding because it mucks up the power relationships. So I'm thinking to explain spin, you need, I think, four models that I can think of. Four models that I can think of. And the models aren't complete. Well, they only say a certain amount of things. They help to a certain amount, but then it's sort of like picking the good part and moving along. So it's like you're on a diet and you've got these beautiful cakes in front of you. You can either eat the cherry on top and a bit of the icing from each of them and discard the other, because you don't want to gain weight. You don't want to gain unwanted things from it. So the first example of this little pendulum is that the pendulum is swinging and it's been swung by electrons. So what are those electrons doing? And the electrons, this is a simple model, the electrons are behaving like children on a big long swing. They are swinging their legs forward with one field direction and swinging their field backwards with another field direction. Now, the strange thing is that in terms of the field goes from the left hip to the right hip on the swing, and when it's going from left to right, their legs flick forward, and when it goes from right to left, their legs flip backwards, and you can use this to control the leg flip. Now, that's a model. The children swing on the swing, so the children are the individual electrons, there's lots of them, and they all swing in power. So that's a good model to describe mechanically what's going on, but of course we don't have that model is optimized there, but it's limited in terms of that magnetic field, legs swinging up. I can do things, I can engineer it so it's a bit more plausible, easy to understand by saying I've got special magnets on me and it hits a nerve and it forces my leg forward or something like that. But again, that's a limited model. Now, the next model is a truly misconceived model, because people want to actually check that you understand angular momentum. So for angular momentum, we have a wheel spinning, and if you hold the wheel and move it, you'll feel this funny force, and the force is funny, and it should prompt you to do some maths, vector calculus maths with cross products and stuff like that. But essentially, we have you're a pendulum, and you're holding, it really doesn't matter what direction you're holding you're holding the axis of a spin flywheel, and you're sitting in a swing, and it's spinning one way, swinging underneath towards you. That's your legs being flicked towards you. You turn the entire pendulum around the flywheel through 180 degrees, so the flywheel underneath is pushing away. That's equivalent to pushing your legs up. And if you imagine that there is a powerful magnet on the left and right side, a north on the left and a south on the right, and as you flick it around, a magnetic field can help you do the energy of your twisting. So this is a powerful model, in that it starts to link a non-person with an object, an inanimate object. Now, the real issue that we get into is that the electron, when you get down to it, we're saying this is electrons like this, it has properties, but electron doesn't have the property of actually spinning. So you can't put a mark on an electron and watch it go round and round and round. And you physically can't grab part of an electron and move it. Right? There's no handles on an electron. There's no aspects to it. And to explain that, we'll get further into the fourth model. But the third model is something which I rather like. And it, all these models don't have the full mathematics. They are an allegory which only explain a tiny amount of it. This one is a sock. And a sock, when you're holding it, you can align a sock to the, you can have a sock on a compass, for instance. So the sock is always pointing there. And what you can do is that you can pull the sock inside out. And this is a way, it's such that you have embroidered a north and a south on a sock, and you can pull the sock inside out. And that way, the north and the south actually, the compass never moves, it just flicks in and out. Now, there's a whole heap of things in that the sock is still definitely in our symmetry space, but it's describing a symmetry operation which is not rotation of the pinch of the flywheel, which we have in the second process, which is obviously, well, it doesn't happen. So the sock's a very limited thing, but I like the sock because it's got the topology of space and spin. It's starting to go ahead here. And we should pause at this point in time to say that we're doing something different here. We're not doing the power play of which is the best explanation. And I'm not explaining as a transaction that you come in, you get your explanation, you walk out, your knowledge, or you don't, and you either get value for your money or not. It's sort of like a bit about a scratchy where you scratch it, and you know, if you had the right experience, you win. And it's sort of like gambling. The house wins all the time, and you go through a process of pumping money and resources into it and never really understanding it. And that's because, so this is a criticism of a just one model viewpoint. Now, the fourth model is not going through the mathematics. I could go through the mathematics of spin. And again, the story of the mathematics of spin is, it can be told as a series of revelations, and the revelation is spin results from special relativity, which is not special, it's actual, the real relativity, or special of all the general relativity. It's relativity. This is a broader, more robust physics fitted into the basic insight. So I've got the basic insight of the quantum mechanics, and then I upgrade that by more robust physics, and out of it pops from the four space-time dimensions of X, Y, Z, and time. Spin comes out, spin up, spin down, antimatter spin up, spin down. So you get all those sorts of things. And it's really, really interesting to go through, and it's all, the understanding is the understanding of the solution of equations, and the solution of equations is not some sort of blackboard thing, a power thing, you know, where someone's great and they're a professor and, oh, professor, you're so great and everyone's nice to him and he walks out feeling powerful. Solution of equation is reality. So a quantum wave function, which we say that an electron is a quantum wave function, it's saying a way, a function is a solution to a spatial formula. So a formula which applies a rule to a graph, for instance, its solution is a function. So y equals x squared, the solution to that over all y and x is this function. So a wave function, a function in this case is a solution, and a wave function is a solution which has got this local solubility. It's actually rather simple. So that's the underlying physics driving it. But at the end of it, these models, and the idea of these models is just to give you a snippet of an idea, is that as you get smaller, as you have an object, you can write a data sheet for it. You can say its color, its overall mass, its composition. So for something macroscopic, you have a huge data sheet. As you get right down to the fundamental particle, you get a smaller and smaller data sheet. In fact, as you get down to, you know, you've got a data sheet, every house is different, but you get down, the bricks are all the same, so you could have the same data sheet per brick. Getting down, all the electrons are the same, but the actual components in that data sheet start to drop off, and you've only got sort of very limited things in that data sheet. So the electron has a mass, so it's something on its data sheet, and there is a mechanism for that mass. It's the Higgs boson, and there's a sort of thing called hypercharge in that electron. It's actually very interesting how that operates. It's got a charge, so it feels electromagnetic force, and it's a quantized charge, so it's a fixed charge. Every electron in the universe has this precise charge which we measure, which is 1 or minus 1 of electric charge, but in terms of macroscopically we can do it. And you can't make an electron with a slightly large charge. Everything's exactly the same. And so really if something's more charged, it's in these little increments of electric charge. And so this is what we're seeing, that the Millikan's oil drop experiment, the oil drop had a precise digital number of charges. Again, this all comes together in terms of topology of space. It's like a knot. You know, you could tie one reef knot or two reef knots. A knot has a sort of a digital topology or shape. Then it's got magnetic field. But what it doesn't have, it has no working parts. So actually so a magnetic field with no working parts is really equivalent to our concept of magic. So something which happens with no functional operating process to happen. So if a cup just lifts up and flies out of Harry Potter and stuff like that, that's magic. And in essence, the electron has the property of magnetic field. It has a property of magnetic field, but no moving parts in it that would explain it to have a magnetic field. If it did, we'd have smaller particles and we'd be able to go further. It's just that at the end of the day, you wind up with just the property. It's just got the property of magnetic field, which tells you something, that the previous things, the swing, the flywheel, the sock, they're never going to explain something which has nothing in it. It's sort of like your Christmas, you rattle the box, it feels empty, you open it, there is nothing in it, there's nothing except the property of magnetic field. Now, there is a mechanism, a process in it, a knotting of space, but this is our understanding of space is mathematical solutions. So that space is gathered up and knotted in a particular way, and the knot gives you magnetic field. And it's also interesting in that magnetic field is a is a reference thing, and it's understanding that makes you say, oh well, you know, magnetic field turns to electric field by frame dependent, what happens with an electron travels at the speed of light, all these questions about the electron. So these are questions I don't have the answer to. I'm thinking through, but as you can see, I'm going through four parallel lines of explanation and not demanding that an explanation solve everything. And I think that's the process, in that if you go in, say you're like in a small sport, and there's several, this is the old style eateries where you've got to fill up your plate. If you come up and say, I have to fill up my plate for the first thing, I move up to the next one, you've got no more room in your plate, and you haven't got a balanced meal, and you've say only got potato salad, and there's prawns and other things across. So this is what I'm truly trying to say, in terms of, if you harass people and say, you've got to go into the smorgasbord, you've got to go in and come out because this thing's happening afterwards, it's a quick thing, people will muck up how they fill up their plate of understanding. So let's move a little bit further forward. We've got mass, charge, magnetic field. Magnetic field has no mechanism for it. It's to do with space and time. There's also angular momentum. Now, that is a spinning cricket ball will have angular momentum. A spinning basketball, cause it to swerve and stuff like that. You'll feel angular momentum in a washing machine. I suppose that type of thing. But it has the property of angular momentum, but no moving parts. It's got a mass. There's no actual rate of revolution of an electron. Okay, so it's got angular momentum. So your flywheel has an angular momentum, and that can be broken up to a mass and a radius, and it's got moving parts to it. So that angular momentum is a complex angular momentum. This has got pure angular momentum. Now, how this is all structured together is structured together mathematically. And the SOC is perhaps the best way of describing it. But there is yet another specification sheet, and it's probably a good thing for this, like colour. It's the actual symmetry of your object. And it's rather unfortunate. It's sort of like, symmetry is almost like the language function of an object, and we're used to everything being English, but electron is basically in Dothraki. It's a new type of symmetry. That's S2 symmetry. So the electron itself, and this is all necessarily struck together, so it's a mathematical object. It's got S2 symmetry, so that means an electron has to rotate twice to get back to the point that you're looking at it. And possibly a fifth model of an electron is a Mobius strip. So your finger can go on a Mobius strip. This is the tape which has got a twister. And it moves, and it takes two revolutions to get back to the same point, because the first revolution gets you to the opposite side. It's a fantastic thing. So it's all coming out there. So that all interacts, and possibly the data, let's go through the data sheet. It's got charge, sort of mass, charge, magnetic field, angular momentum, S2 symmetry, and it's also obeys something called a wave function. So if you say have a kilogram of sugar, and that sugar spills on the floor, and it there's moisture in it, and it goes it back down to atomic level, and it's all spread out on your floor, and people come in and say, where is the sugar? There's still a kilogram of sugar, but it's spread out all over the floor. And at best you can say, at any point in the floor, there's that much sugar in it. And the idea of an extended object where you can interrogate any pointed space, that's called a field. And so an electron is a field existence object. It is an object which has got an extended existence. It doesn't exist as a point. It exists as a wave function. So a wave function is basically a field of solutions, X, Y, Z. So each electron actually, in fact, exists throughout the entire universe because there's no mathematical limit to say, well, we'll stop asking. You can keep asking. Except it gets really, really small further out, but it does there. So its existence in it's and how does it manage, you know, extended time and stuff like that? Well, this is how it does it. Is that question has led to the relativity wave function. So there are issues about causality, and it sort of comes out like that, but because, of course, now the important point, the sort of final point here, is that each point in space, that unit here, so if I have a thermometer, I can walk around all of Australia and measure the temperature field, that is, the temperatures existing at all points in space, and I can measure the pressure field. And that's a number that will be, say, in Australia generally, 10 to 30 degrees Celsius will be around there. And that's an answer. Now, it's not so much the range of the answer which is important, it's the actual answer itself. The answer itself comes back as a complex number. And that complex number itself can't be interpreted in our mentality. This is one of the great things, is that half of maths from, 200 years has departed our ability to understand it. A complex number arrives when you ask the mathematical question, what is the square root of -2? You can say it has no answer, that's one way, or you can say it's the square root of 2i. Yeah, so I squared gives you a minus, but that's an algebraic roots. Now, the bottom line is that a formula written out, if it's got squares in it, will have roots, and the roots of a special quantum mechanical equation has, where it's the square root, it's got two roots. The square root of 4 is 2 and minus 2. The square root of minus 4 is 2i and minus 2i. There's two solutions to it. So if you can imagine a space, that space, generally when a curve crosses at one point. In higher order stuff, it crosses at multiple points. For this, you have this solution, which is the wave function for it, and you have four solutions, points in space, and I won't go into this, an antimatter problem, that they're negative solutions, and to drop down to the lowest energy, you can go to minus infinity, and you know, this is a little bit of a complex thing to get your mind around, given that this is going to be a limit to the model. And this sort of gets you into the direction something flows in time. So antimatter flows backwards in time. This is I point to try and understand. So let's go back to the electron. This is our fourth model. So we have the child on a swing, to give you one aspect of it, a gyroscope, but that gives you an idea that I'm linking magnetic field and model, but a sock which has the idea that a jar of soap can't be actually twisted, it actually gets pulled inside out and spins the opposite way. And again, it's a limited model. And sort of like a tour, like these models don't tell you everything, a tour of it. This is the property sheet of an electron, which is more faithful to what can and cannot be. So an electron does not have the property of revolution. You can't. An electron has spin, but you can't spin it. You can't get an electron and actually spin it around. In fact, this is one of the interesting things. If you spin up any material fast enough, it will generate a magnetic field. It's called the Barnett effect. And so these effects that I'm looking at, which is the rocking, sort of really get into that higher level thing. So let's go through that fourth level again. It's the mass, the charge. Now, it's got a mass, but it's actually got no moving parts. So it's got the property of mass, but it's got no physical substance. There's no point in an electron where you can cut through and your knife will bump off anything there. It's got the property of charge. So there's no way that you can cut an electron in half and get half a charge. It's got the property of it. It's like you can't rip up that data sheet. It's got magnetic field, and the magnetic field is related to, is locked to the angular momentum, but it's only got the property of magnetic field, and it's only got the property of angular momentum. Now, the interesting thing is that the way that I can... There's two ways of getting a magnet. One is to get a current, to build it macroscopically, or gather a whole heap of atoms with the excess property. It just has the property of it. It's got the overall S2 symmetry, so this describes how it behaves in detail. Magnetic fields and angular momentum is related to spin. And I'll just do a little aside in it, because it takes a little sort of brain power to go. But the actual shape of the electron itself is sort of like Play-Doh, in terms of the Play-Doh is formed, and the Play-Doh, like I can do a Play-Doh parabola, or I can do a Play-Doh sphere. But it's sort of like so Play-Doh's got a surface. The interesting thing is that in the property sheet, surface is not in there. Electrons do not have a surface. So an electron has an existence, and if you're a neutron or another electron, for instance, or even a proton, you can actually just uniformly travel through an electron. You'll never hit a surface. And that's an important thing to get. And there's sort of lots of interesting things to think about how it goes through. It's actually hours of fascination. However, the sort of take-home message here is that I've given an explanation of it in terms of these sort of gentle, partial explanations and partial boxes, and a time frame saying, well, it's an open question, you're not going to understand it in a short term. Now, if you have a power structure in society where you have people who don't think that way coming in judging and saying, go, I recommend, it's sort of like TripAdvisor for explanations, you're going to have all the tourists running through and doing the same thing, whereas the actual person in the sort of rustic French farmyard who's doing the grapes, making their own cheese, having a life, really enjoying the quality of life, that's what you do. It's like science is not a tourist destination. It's a lifestyle. And the trap is to not go up to these tourist camps, go into a tourist bus stop cafe where the buses turn up and all the tourists go up, and then start to go up to someone who's tucking their way into sort of store belt, store microwave lasagna, but there's a person in the background sort of playing a piano and popping out wine out of a rustic container, even though they've just poured it out. If you go up there and just sort of say, hang on, you're missing out, these people are just not going to understand it, because they've paid for their cook's tour. They want certainty. It's sort of like this very addictive thing in terms of people in the want of certainty, see less and less. They see only things which are certain. So people who want certainty only see things which are certain, and their world collapses until certainty is given to them through their collapse of view. And this is one of these things that sort of a deeper understanding of it. So in terms of, it's sort of this unfolding strategy of, there's a whole series of interactions which don't work. People are really not interested in teaching any better. People are really not interested in the way forward. And part of them saying no, they just can't say no. They have to say no, plus here is a power currency, in terms of people play with power currency in a positive way and a negative way. This is the way that they sort of navigate a power situation, by moving themselves forward in the power situation. And you can sort of respond to that. There's two ways. You can actually go with the flow of negativity, or you can do what I've done, which is just quietly go through the maths, go through the history, go through the gap, or do a strategic analysis and say, look, I'm going to build this. And it's uncertain, but if I work on it, I might be able to do it. And this is very fortunate. And the whole thing of it is that at the end of the day, I haven't built something which is consistent with their world, which desires consistency, because they achieve consistency not through purity of thought. It's called a limitation of thought. They limit the way that they think. They only want one model. They want one model. They want to understand it in a period of time. Whereas I would suggest at this stage that as it stands now, we need at least four or even five models, plus with those five models on the table, some in-depth maths and computer simulations to get there over a period of time. And the understanding is not something, I mean, this is a horrible thought of understanding, discarding. It's sort of like you're sort of like eating food and it passes out of you. It's like you eat the food, you get the, and it's understanding. It's not that way. So I hope I've left you with some sort of guide. And this is this entire problem all the time of walking separately from this viewpoint, and then you have to walk back and get that kernel of understanding into little fragments of what you're producing, such as a coherent coherent hold. And so really what I'm doing now in terms of the YouTube, I'm treating it as an artist's canvas. I'm doing the overall sketch, and I'm coming back and rebuilding the canvas and bringing things on, moving the composition around, moving the level of, say, from a simple statement to a more complex, nuanced statement, which sort of sidesteps, you're coming in this direction. And that's what I'm trying to do. And so, again, people are very much in the digital communication, where you've got a window of communication to the customer and their attention flags immediately. This is a more long-term relationship and requires long-term work. And it's got to be robust. It's got to be able to survive a large number of people being not interested and sort of like wintering down, hibernation, putting that next layer on it. Thanks a lot for listening, and I'll go and check how my kids are going ready for school.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.